Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050. Brian Hayes in here with Dave Feschuk of the Toronto Star. As you know, you can find everything podcasted online at TSN1050.ca or subscribe and check us out on iTunes. Chris sending a tweet in saying, I'm listening to the first hour of the podcast down here in Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
So what time is it over there? Like 6 in the morning?
Yeah, they're like on the other side of the world.
Yeah. He said, I'm a bit behind. Yeah, well, actually, you're way ahead.
Exactly.
If we're being factual here, Chris. But he said, I heard how you started your day off, Hayes, and I was reciting how my day started. Because I had my daughter in bed with us. She came in around like 4:30 or 5. She got up, and we were like, we don't want to get up right now, so you can come lay with your mom and I, and hopefully we can sleep for a few hours, which we did accomplish. But she started rolling around, and she kicks a little bit in her sleep, and she kicked me right in the junk this morning. I was dead asleep.
Until
I got kicked right square in the wrong area.
Ooh.
And Chris said, anytime you have kids in the bed, you need to have a pillow between your legs at all times.
Smart.
Yeah, I don't know.
Good safety tip.
I guess you're right about that, Chris. So shout out to Chris and all the faithful Overdrive fans down in Sydney, Australia.
That's pretty wild in this day and age that it still kind of makes you, you know, it kind of blows your mind that somebody that far away could be listening to us sitting here in Toronto.
I figured down in Australia, all they're talking about is the fact that Emma and Lockie from the Wiggles are getting divorced.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Oh, of course I did.
Yeah. Was your boy ever into the Wiggles?
He certainly was, as was I.
Yeah,
I thought the tunes were catchy. I was a big fan.
You're right. None of the parents are willing to go on the record and admit to it, but they're all kind of like, I'm into the big red car. I mean, hey. I got nothing wrong with that.
You know, fruit salad, yummy, yummy.
That's right, man.
Mashed bananas.
Oh,
like that one.
Absolutely.
It's a damn good tune.
It's a great, great tune. There's a lot of great ones. So shout out to the Wiggles, and hopefully Emma and Lockie can figure their professional life out, because their personal life is obviously taking a turn for the worse. Steve Simmons with the Sun coming up in a moment. Wanted to get into Steve's piece about Gibbons and the Sun today.
Yeah.
And kind of challenge Steve a little bit, because this is kind of what I was expecting, is there's going to be a lot of support for Gibbons, which I understand. And Steve actually writes that this year John Gibbons is actually managing harder and better than he ever has before. And I'd like to get Simmons to explain how that's possible, because I'm not really sure how it is. But we had Ross Atkins, the GM of the Jays, join us in the 4 p.m. hour. And the biggest story in the city right now, outside of the flash flooding and buck of beer stuff,
and the Raptors snubbed on Christmas Day again.
Yeah, which we can get back into later in the hour. But it's about Gibbons. You know,
it's the security
of the manager of the Blue Jays, who's been here since 2012, who was the skipper for the team when they went to back-to-back ALCS appearances, is a guy who is beloved by the fan base and the media. You don't necessarily love his tactics all the time. Maybe you don't support the way he utilizes his bullpen, whatever. I mean, there's so many different viewpoints out there, and everyone's got one. Everyone's got an opinion on Gibbons as a manager. But as a person and as a guy who speaks with the media and vicariously through the media to the fan base, this guy hits it out of the park almost every single day.
Yeah, he's beloved. He's been able to engender great feelings around this town. And hey, the reason is, on top of him being a good old boy with a good sense of humor and doesn't take himself too seriously, he's been associated with winning. I mean, the renaissance of this team after that 22-year walk through the desert, no playoffs, was under his watch.
Yeah, he was the guy. He was the manager of the team that won a bunch of ball games.
And that halo lingers. That when you're involved in a moment that had the city rallying around this team in a way it hadn't for a generation, that halo lingers.
Which is totally understandable, especially even when you're losing now. Now, that doesn't mean you get a job for life, and Gibbons doesn't expect that. I mean, he doesn't think he's going to be here for the next 15 years.
No, he's 56 years old. He knows his time is coming.
But in the optics battle and the battle in the court of public opinion, he's going to come out on top over Atkins and Shapiro, because they don't have that winning associated with them. And really, since they've actually taken over the club, they've lost a lot of ball games.
And the other thing is, they don't have the ability to communicate with people.
They're not savvy with the media.
The way John Gibbons can communicate with people. We just had Ross Atkins on, and hey, we appreciate him coming on. He's a good guy to come on, but you know, he speaks in that very corporate way that I think a lot of fans, in my experience, are put off by.
Right, and he joined us today, and because of the Gibbons rumors, he knew we were going to ask him about that. We were going to try to get a definitive answer out of him. He's not stupid. I honestly thought that they agreed to come on, and he agreed to come on, to basically say that the rumors have no value.
Yeah, dispel the rumors, clean the slate, say, hey, let's just move this conversation forward because John Gibbons isn't going anywhere this season.
We're all on the same page. We're big fans of John Gibbons. Obviously, we'll reevaluate at the end of the year like we do every single season. So I'm not going to give you a committal in terms of what's going to happen in 2019 and beyond. But for the final 50 games of the season, he's our guy.
Exactly.
Like, again, what could have possibly changed? Because it's not the standings that's changed. They've been out of the race for 2 months.
28 games out of the AL East lead.
Right.
Nowhere near a wild card.
No, it's over.
It's been over for a long, long
for
time.
For a long, long time. So this is not about results. If you ever were thinking of moving on from Gibbons, it's not because, oh, man, we lost to Boston in extra innings last night. Now something's got to give.
Right.
So we had Atkins on in the 4 p.m. hour. And it was the first thing we really asked him was, give us your answer on this. What do you have to tell us, and by extension, the fans in this city, about the security of John Gibbons going forward? Here's what Ross Atkins said.
Oh, he's, you know, Gibby and I every day enjoy talking about just how we can get better and, you know, really have established a great deal of respect for him and have a great relationship and everything. All of our discussions are about our daily improvement, how to put the best foot forward for each game. And, you know, as you know, we also now talk a lot more about our future, and he is very much a part of those discussions as we think about how we can improve the organization.
So a part of the discussions about the future, but didn't say he's a part of that future.
No, he did not.
And again, when asked about his status for the rest of the year and all of these rumors and reports out there that Gibbons could be on his way out at any moment, maybe after tonight, maybe by the end of the week, maybe by the end of the month, that was the answer Ross Atkins gave, very noncommittal. So naturally, we followed up and said, Ross, are you telling us then that is he 100% the guy for the rest of the year? And this was his follow-up answer on that question.
I don't know the best way to categorize these discussions. It really is. It's the best thing I can tell you is he is he's a pleasure to work with, and he is absolutely a part of all of our discussions that involve the future.
Okay, so again, I can't give you a 100% guarantee he will be here the rest of the year. Now, maybe that was because Atkins is indicating that Gibbons is going to quit, but nobody thinks Gibbons is going to quit and leave the money on the table.
Nobody leaves the money on the table.
Why would you go this far into the season and then say, you know what, I got to get out of here? You're leaving in a month and a half anyway. You're out of here the day after the season. John Gibbons is back in San Antonio, and if he never wants to come back to Toronto again, he doesn't have to. But he's not going to quit. Nobody expects that to be the case.
Nobody's quitting. When you got a year of security on the table, when you got 2019 guaranteed, you're taking your guarantee.
Right. So that was the first answer to the first follow-up. Here is the second answer to the second follow-up, where we pushed Atkins again and basically made it clear to him, listen, everyone wants to know. Like, this is what everybody is talking about. Is he going to be here, John Gibbons, the rest of the season?
Yeah, our commitment's to improvement and getting better every day. That goes for every employee here. So I absolutely respect and understand your interest and your inquiry, but our focus is on how we get better each day.
Here's Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun and TSN Radio. I'm sure you heard his interview earlier. If not, you just heard the clips we just played. What do you make of Atkins not coming on the record and saying, no, 100%, Gibbons will be here the rest of the year?
If you asked Ross Atkins if there are days ending in Y, he would probably say, no, there are only vowels. That's how Ross answers questions.
So you're not reading into it then?
No, I think he's going to finish the season. I don't see why it would make sense for him not to finish the season. He's not going to quit. I suspect they're not going to fire him. But it's pretty clear, you know, from what I've been able to surmise and learn and find out from talking to people, that John does not believe that he's coming back next year, and I don't think John believes he's managing this team next year.
So to what end, Steve? Like, what of all the problems this franchise has, you know, being 28 games out of the American League lead, being whatever it is, 15 games out of the wild card, having the season just go south very quickly. I mean, I don't think managerial acumen has been high on a lot of people's lists of the problems. So why would they move forward here?
Well, I don't think they would necessarily. And the only reason that, this came out at all is that there was some supposition on a Rogers website that this was going to happen. And, you know, some of that stuff is fed to the Rogers people from the ownership and or management of the club. They're trying to control their own media. They've attempted to do that in the new regime, so to speak. It's all Rogers all the time, with all due respect to those of us who work in other areas and other places. Dave's at one newspaper, I'm at another, you're at a radio station, Brian. They don't seem to care much about us or what we report or what we do. We're another entity outside of their own world of control. And so somebody said something to somebody, and therefore it was. I won't even say it was reported. There was a notion in a piece that this would be John Gibbons' last homestand, and that DeMarlo Hale would take over as manager, and a new manager would be found once the season is over. And therefore, a lot of people are asking a lot of questions, mostly privately yesterday. You know, as much as they could get to talk to Ross or talk to John, I talked to players. I didn't get anyone who had a sense that this was imminent or this was happening on this homestand. And you're right, David, it isn't the most pressing thing. It's probably the least pressing thing. Because the one area I'm absolutely confident that they have, you know, someone in place that is smart and strong and knows what he's doing is in the manager's job. And last night, the perfect example, he managed the game perfectly. Unfortunately, his players didn't play the game perfectly.
Yeah.
And when you go to Giles and Giles gives up two home runs in a tie game, you know, against the Red Sox in extra inning, and he's supposed to be the closer they've given you, that management's given you, now that Roberto Osuna is gone, those are the cards you're dealt, and that's what you do. And in talking to John before the game, one of the great joys of the job is that half an hour or so we have in his office before the games. He's a delightful man, and to spend that time with him on a daily basis for the guys who are there all the time is really an enjoyable thing. And yesterday he was talking. He was asked about managing, and he said, you know, you can make all the right moves, and they can turn out completely wrong, and some days you can make all the wrong moves, and they can turn out completely right. And that's what managing in the big leagues is. And Ross Atkins, as Rich Griffin pointed out on Toronto Today earlier, Ross Atkins was arguing in the preseason that John Gibbons was a top 10 manager in baseball. Griff wasn't buying it necessarily, but that's where Ross had him at the time. I don't think they have, you know, I don't think he's changed his mind that much, but this team's fallen apart in almost every conceivable way. Since then.
Well, and that's why there's a lot to unpack here about how it would come to a point where there are reports that these guys may not coexist until the end of the year. And if it does get to the end of the year, that Gibbons isn't coming back. I mean, you insinuated that in your piece today. Well, there have been other reports. Ken Rosenthal's reported recently that he thinks Gibbons is done at the end of the year. So, you know, is it Gibbons that wants out? Because that there's a lot of smoke there, Steve, that it's Gibbons that really wants out.
I don't think Gibbons wants out. I think Gibbons wants a better ball team.
Well, that's not going to happen, though. He's got to,
no,
you know.
Look what's happened this year. I mean, his best player has basically been absent the entire season in Josh Donaldson. His best pitchers, Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman, have either been hurt or up and down. You can run through it. Troy Tulowitzki hasn't played a game. You can start going through the roster. Russell Martin has been battered for a lot of the year. You can go through the whole roster and find all of the problems. I think there are so many issues to deal with. I agree. To be managerial is almost low on the list of things, but we're just counting one thing here. Ross Atkins and John Gibbons get along very well. They work together regularly. They meet regularly. We don't hear another name in that equation, and that's Mark Shapiro. Where does he fit in? What does he think? Who knows what he thinks? Because he doesn't share very much of that with anyone. Not locally, and certainly not outside his little Rogers world.
Well, so, that's why I feel for Atkins in a way. I mean, I'm not going to shed tears over Ross. He's making money, and he's in a very lucrative job, but he's the guy that always gets peddled out. You know, after the Osuna stuff, he's got to go out and speak. After they trade Osuna, he's got to go out and speak. I thought that should have been Shapiro that was the voice box of the team. And, you know, then Atkins comes on today, and what you said is accurate for the most part about them trying to control the news. But why did he take the interview with us today when he knows that we're going to push him on this kind of stuff? Like, I was expecting him to come out and douse water on the flames and say he's staying. Like, if Gibbons is here for the rest of the year, why would you not just say that? Why would you not say it?
That part I don't understand. Because why in this season going nowhere? Unless you have a guy that you absolutely want to be your manager, that you need to get a leg up on quickly. That is the only reason I would make a switch between now and the end of the season. If you have your next guy ready to come and you want to expose him to what you have here and maybe get a look at some of these young guys or some of the players in September that they bring up, if you want to do that, I understand that. What I don't understand, and this is Ross just leads to more speculation by not coming out and definitively saying John Gibbons is here for the rest of the season. But we all know, we've all been around long enough to know that votes of confidence are worth nothing.
Well, but that's true with certain contexts, Steve. Again, as I've said throughout the afternoon, because Dave brought up that point too, that's true if you're a team in playoff contention that loses 10 games in a row. Not when you're 27 games out. Like, this has not, there's no rhyme or reason to fire John Gibbons based on performance. Like, based on standings. So it's not your, you know, conventional vote of confidence that you may have to turn your back on 4 or 5 days down the road, because there'd be, it's not like you could come out and be like, well, they got swept by the Sox, so we had to fire them. The team's been awful all year.
No, right now it's, we really want this guy to be the manager next year. And the only way necessarily we're going to get this guy for certain is to get him now. I'm just surmising here, but that to me is the only circumstance that you would consider replacing John Gibbons at this stage. And I don't advocate replacing him at all, frankly. But that's the way I view it. That is the only reason, unless someone upstairs in Rogers just says, like, you know, this guy has to go, like Ed Rogers or somebody says that. And who knows where his mind is when it comes to this stuff, because he's been, you know, somewhat unusual in the past and a bit flippant in the past. So we'll see. We don't know what that is or what that means or how much pressure there is on those people upstairs if he wants him gone for whatever reason. But we do know that Ross doesn't want him gone, and because Ross has been a great defender and an appreciator of John Gibbons in the time they've worked together.
So if they're moving forward here, Steve, I mean, it sure seems like they're going to at some point, whether it is, you know, in the remaining 50, whatever it is, games, or whether it is in the offseason. I mean, how do you think they should proceed? There's some big name guys that could be on the market. Mike Socha is said to be done in California. You got Joe Girardi out there. You got Dusty Baker out there. Do you think they go that direction with a proven commodity, or do they go with a younger guy who maybe can relate to the, you know, the teenage Vladdy Guerrero Jr. who's coming into the clubhouse is going to be part of the core?
I think, and historically, if you look at the way Shapiro has conducted himself, virtually every hiring is someone he's done business with, someone he's had in his organization, someone he's worked with. He had a choice of Tony LaCava or Ross Atkins as general manager. He chose Ross Atkins, who he worked with in Cleveland. And if you go through some of the other hirings and the things they've done in the organization, they have favored the people that Mark has worked with in the past. So you would expect or think that there are people out there that he's worked with before at various levels in different ways And those would be, I think, the leaders on the list. It had been suggested long ago by my friend, our friend, Michael Farber, that they should have an Hispanic manager or a Spanish-speaking manager, because, you know, if you go forward right now, Vladdy Guerrero is the prize in the organization. Teoscar Hernandez is one of the big bats. You can start looking around. There's a significant Latin flavor to this club, so you might want to do something from that point of view. There's been some suggestion that John Schneider, the AA manager, might be a candidate because of his connection to Vladdy Guerrero and Bo Bichette and the players that have been through there, a lot of whom will be playing for the Jays in the next year or two. And so there's a lot of different ways you can go. But let's say, you know, you pick Socha, for example. You know, Ken Rosenthal's already reported that Socha is going to be out with the Angels at the end of the year. Socha called the report poppycock, by the way.
Yeah.
Very, very little of what Ken Rosenthal reports I would file under the label poppycock.
Same here.
I wouldn't file anything under that label. That word is the most ludicrous word in the history of the dictionary, but anyway.
So if that's a guy you want, you know, you can wait to the end of the year and maybe, you know, go at him right away. There's, you know, we don't know what they're thinking. We don't know what moves have been made. We don't know what kind of conversations they've had in that regard. I can tell you one thing for absolute certain. Managing has had almost nothing to do this year with how bad this team is. This is just a bad baseball team. That's on Mark Shapiro. That's on Ross Atkins. This is not on John Gibbons.
No, I think everyone would commit to that.
And I want to just get one point across, if I can. In my conversation with John yesterday, earlier in the season, I would have bet that he would have flown home, gone to San Antonio, and happily retired from baseball and taken his 1 year that he has salary coming and got back to family life, so to speak. Yesterday when I spoke to him, he had a completely different view. He's not ready to leave baseball. He's not ready to retire. He's not ready even to leave managing if it comes to that. So if he gets let go by the Blue Jays, I would expect to see him back in the major leagues or back in baseball in some capacity next year.
With Steve Simmons of the Sun. Well, he's going to get promoted a lot from people in Toronto. We've been talking about this throughout the week. He's handled the media beautifully because he's a, by all accounts, a really good guy. He treats everybody equally. He doesn't snap on people, treats people with respect. And he is associated with the only winning seasons of the past 25 years. So he deserves that kind of association. And he's going to be compared and contrasted to Shapiro and Atkins, who in this city are kind of, they're trying to battle an uphill battle. I mean, let's put it that way. They're not in good standing in terms of how the fan base and the media is covering them and dealing with them. So Gibbons is in a good situation here because people in Toronto are going to pump his tires. Like,
yeah, and let's say you're Alex Anthopoulos and you're in Atlanta and you like your manager in Atlanta. You might want John Gibbons as a bench coach. You might, you know, want him as your third base coach. You know what I mean? You might want him as your roving minor league instructor, you know, depending on what it is. One thing about John, he has a lot of friends in baseball. And you see it when the other team comes in because him and the other manager, they're hugging. And him and the other third base coaches, they're hugging. And the pitching coaches, everybody, it's a small world, and everybody knows everybody. And not everybody's buddy-buddy. But I think John's been around long enough that he's got a pretty good reputation and people really like the man. And even the not so loved managers like Buck Showalter who historically have great reputations, but this has been an awful year for Showalter and his Orioles, and he'll likely be shown the door at the end of this year. But Showalter always talks about how impressed he is with John Gibbons' teams and how they play. And so you get that from a lot of people. And I think, you know, I think he's really gone through a metamorphosis here. He's gone through a period where the public didn't get him and the public didn't understand the mumbling and the fact that he didn't come across well on clips on radio and clips on television. It took a while for people to sort of understand who he was and how he operated, and that he wasn't sort of this, you know, stumbling and bumbling kind of, you know, old hick from down south. I think people now see a different guy, and he's really grown into himself over the years. And I think the public has grown into him as well. And when he goes, I think it'll be a nice goodbye, so to speak, as like the Dwayne Casey firing was with the Raptors. You know, I don't think anybody said a bad word about Dwayne Casey when he was leaving town.
Well, not about his persona, but they were critical of his coaching against Cleveland anyway. Like, yeah. What Gibbons has going for him here is that no one's even paying attention to the X's and O's, which is really quite interesting when you consider this is a team that's on pace for low 70s in wins, and I haven't seen any hit pieces on Gibbons. Like, nothing.
Well, here's the thing, and this is one of the things about Atkins and Shapiro I don't understand, because I value defense in baseball greatly, and some of the analytics don't look at it the same way that old guys like me do. And John Gibbons values defense, and he doesn't have enough guys who can play it. And so when a fly ball is hit to left field and Teoscar Hernandez botches it, that's not on the manager. That's on the general manager. And that's on the president. And when the ball's hit to Diaz at shortstop and he botches it, that's not on the manager. And they're lucky to have Justin Smoke at first base, who, you know, has probably, you know, saved 15 errors this year on bad throws and bad plays that have been made against it. But you look, you know, outside of maybe two or three positions, this is a really bad defensive team.
Yeah, well, it's a bad team all over.
You could have Walter Alston or Bobby Cox or Red Shaneyster or whoever you want managing it, and they're not going to play any better defense because these guys just aren't good defensive players.
Well, Steve, I think you're in here tomorrow, aren't you, with me?
I am.
All right. Well, good stuff, man. I guess we'll see you here tomorrow at 4 p.m.
All right. Looking forward to it. Brian, we'll talk then.
Yes, we will. We'll chat then at 4 p.m.
Sorry.
Get the lingo
down,
Steve.
Come on, Steve. Get it right, man. All right. See you, Steve. Steve Simmons of Sun Media. Well, that's interesting. I mean, he reads it. What he said about Atkins and Gibbons is potentially accurate. I mean, I can't dispute that their relationship might be okay, because Shapiro's he's the puppeteer in all of this.
Sure.
So it doesn't really matter if Atkins and Gibbons are on the same page. If Shapiro isn't,
exactly,
guess who's going to win that fight? But nobody knows what Shapiro's ever thinking, because he doesn't really talk and he doesn't really tell people. Or if he does, he leaks it. And then you have to try to decipher exactly who it came from, because it's never exactly from him. He's never quoted.
No, he's never quoted.
It's always sources are saying, and then you can maybe figure out, was that Shapiro? It kind of sounds like something Shapiro would leak.
Yeah, I think you can be safe that a lot of the stuff that is leaked to insiders is coming from Shapiro.
Right. And maybe that is the case here with the Gibbons and Atkins stuff, where Atkins is coming on the radio. He's like, I don't even know if Shapiro might fire him tonight.
There could be some of that.
Like, he
there
might fire him by the end of the week.
Like, it's very clear when you look at the delineation of responsibility that Atkins is the employee and Shapiro is the boss.
Right.
So what the boss is thinking, you know, maybe Atkins, to his credit and to defend him a little bit for why he sort of does babble on in corporate speak that is very hard to decipher sometimes and doesn't make a lot of sense, maybe he's as, you know, clueless as the rest of us as to what the boss is actually thinking.
Right. Hopefully for his sake that isn't the case. But if you read a report that Gibbons could be fired at the end of the week and you're like, I haven't heard anything about that.
Right.
But it's coming from a source where you're like, that seems like
be coming from somewhere within this building.
Someone who is in the building. Then where is it coming from?
Exactly.
PGA Championship teeing off tomorrow. Tiger Woods, of course, in the field. We'll get into that. And Christmas Day will not feature the Raptors again. Some people aren't happy about
ho,
that.
Ho, ho, ho.
Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, so some big news, I guess, in the NBA, breaking over the past 24 hours. The Christmas Day schedule is out. 5 games, 10 teams, none of them from Toronto, none of them Raptors, which shouldn't surprise anybody.
No.
But I understand why some people are upset. I mean, personally, I would like to see them play on Christmas Day. Now, I say that without knowing exactly what my schedule is going to look like. and what I'm going to be doing throughout the afternoon and throughout the evening, but it's the biggest day of the regular season calendar. It has been for years, and it will continue to be going forward.
Yeah, it's the unofficial start of the season. It's when the real primetime coverage kicks in, and it's always been fun. I mean, as somebody who loves the game, I've always looked forward to it, and I'm like you. It's always been a thing, like, when will the Raptors get this token of respect? When will it get this nod from down south that they're worthy of Christmas Day? And you figured this might have been the year.
Yeah, well, and if it wasn't going to be this year, I don't know when it actually will be, because the storylines are built in to generate interest and maybe some ratings. You know, it's always about ratings. It's always about revenue with ESPN, ABC, TNT.
Wow.
I mean, it's the same thing up here with TSN and Sportsnet. They're about getting people to tune in.
You know what it's
in.
Like? It's like, why is it on Saturday night that the Leafs always play?
Exactly.
They get the biggest draw.
Exactly.
No question. It's not that there aren't other teams that are worthy of playing in the spotlight of a 7 o'clock Saturday night game in the grand old tradition of Canadian hockey, but the Leafs get it because the Leafs are the biggest market, and it's about money, ultimately.
Absolutely. But this is different because it's 5 games that are staggered.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got a third of your league is playing. A third of your league. And you're telling me you couldn't set up a compelling storyline where DeMar and Kawhi play each other for the first time, Kawhi in San Antonio or DeMar in Toronto, whatever it's going to be. I understand where ESPN and ABC come from, and this has always been out there. It's the same thing with Sunday Night Baseball. We've been talking about it forever. The Jays never get on Sunday Night Baseball because Toronto, the Blue Jays are not a sexy team, and Toronto doesn't count in terms of the ratings.
And ultimately, even if the Blue Jays were a sexy team, and even if I think the Raptors were a sexier team, it might change the calculus, but ultimately, there was a reason that the NBA TV deal jumped from about $1 billion a year 2 years ago to now what it is, which is an amazing $2.66 billion a year in TV revenues, which is why these players are getting these incredible supermax mega contracts that we just can't fathom. Non-players, guys who can barely play, are making $20 million a year because of those TV numbers. And ultimately, when you're in a market that we're living in right here that does not register on U.S. ratings and does not register with U.S. advertisers, more to the point, it's just a business no-no.
It is, but again, I don't think it means that the ratings would drop off.
They just would.
I don't think it would. If it was like the third or fourth game sandwiched between other games, I don't think they're doing like 8 million on average and then 2 million for the Raptors, Spurs, and then back to 8 million.
I've been through this with guys that know better than you and I about this, and it does, because the local market has to bear a chunk of the responsibility for the ratings, right? And that's why the big local markets get the games.
I totally understand that on Wednesday night, on Thursday night TNT, any other day of the year. Christmas has been different.
Yeah,
Christmas has been amplified as a celebration of the NBA and the storylines.
But this suggests it hasn't been, because like the Raptors have never had more goodwill within the NBA head office. Like, Adam Silver thinks the world of Masai Ujiri, and Masai Ujiri has pleaded with Adam Silver to get them a Christmas Day game.
Exactly.
And still, no.
And that's
no
why
game.
People are still rattled about it. And I think, again, what is making a lot of Raptors fans, I gather, sensitive to it this year as opposed to other years, and I would guess years going forward, is the Kawhi angle. Like, this is such a different experience for Raptors fans and for the organization, because we've never been in a position like this before.
Yeah.
Where a superstar is coming aboard, he's got 1 year left on his deal, he's already made it clear through other parties that he'd rather be somewhere else, and you've got 1 year to try to convince him that he wants to stick around. Now, playing on Christmas wasn't going to do that. Just because if they were on the Christmas schedule, it's not like he'd be like, here, I'll just sign the max deal right now. I'm sticking around. This is amazing.
Far, far from it.
But it is about image. It is about perception. It is about being on the NBA map. And this could have done something to sell him on the idea that, look, we are a legitimate franchise in the league. And it's just one more strike against them.
It's one more thing to put on the list if you can get it, right? And it's, look, you do hear those rumblings that Kawhi Leonard or people around Kawhi Leonard are concerned with his brand. They don't think his brand, let's use that kind of ugly term of commerce, his brand isn't big enough. He needs to build his brand. And how do you build your brand? Well, you get in front of eyeballs. And how do you get in front of eyeballs? You play on Christmas Day. And now that they're not, you could make the case. It's one more knock against them. The weather's brutal. You know, he's an LA guy. He's not going to like the weather. Now he's not going to like the fact they're not playing on Christmas Day. But let's be honest here. That I don't think it's going to be in the final calculation of whether or not Kawhi Leonard wants to stay here. I don't think it's going to rank very high.
No, I don't think it will either.
It's going to depend on how they do.
How
they play, how his year goes.
Right. But, I mean, I would think his brand is going to be factored in. He's got people that are looking after him.
Yes.
Because he's not going to speak on his own behalf. So someone else has to. And it sounds like it's been his uncle.
But we were talking about it. Like, if you're ABC or ESPN or whatever, whoever's thinking about putting that game on, it's the great storyline of Kawhi going back to San Antonio. So you're thinking, it's going to be a great story to tell. It's going to be a wonderful broadcast. Hey, Kawhi, can we get an interview before the game to talk about what it means to you to come back to San Antonio? And Kawhi Leonard's like, no. Or if you do get the interview, it's like Rachel Nichols, one of the best interviewers in the business, super energetic, putting everything she has into like 20 questions to which she gets 21 word answers.
That would be a bit of a problem.
Not compelling TV.
It wouldn't be, but DeMar has put himself on the map with his reaction to the trade as well. So you could get an interview with DeMar and try to make it somewhat compelling. But
you
anyway,
could, but he's already done that interview. The story's been told.
It's a moot point anyway. Yeah. They're not playing. It's out. Like they're not playing.
No, I know. But I'm saying there's reasons they're not playing. And one of them is that the Raptors live in Canada. The other one is they're just not that sexy a team. Like outside of this market. I mean, they're your home team and you should love them and I support you for loving them. But when you go down south, man, put it in perspective. People aren't that high on this team.
There's no question about that. But again, I look at Utah playing Portland, and I question whether or not ESPN really cares about the Salt Lake City market.
No.
Like I don't think that that's really true.
But the bottom line is Salt Lake City is in the United States of America.
In the United States.
That's the thing about it that puts it above the Raptors in this conversation.
You want to hear the hockeyest guy quote of all time?
I do.
From Connor McDavid, who I guess was up at the Rogers Cup last night, and I think Zeisberger caught up with him of NHL.com. I just saw Zeiss's quote that he posted with the link of the article and was asked about, McDavid was asked about what he thought the Oilers were going to do this offseason, how he felt about the offseason. He said, quote, "I think the message was that there was a move to be if there was a move to be made, they'd make it. But obviously nothing too promising came up. That's good. You want to keep the team together," end quote. Really? You want to keep that Oilers team together?
That team together, Connor?
That team was an abomination, and you really think anyone believes you want to keep that team together?
That's a nice thing to say to your buddies in the dressing room.
That's why you got the C on your jersey.
That's why you got the C on your jersey. But at some point, you hope that Connor McDavid, comes to his senses and realizes that things are not going good. Things are probably not going to happen for him in Edmonton.
Well, do you think he could be the hockey version of LeBron?
Yeah,
gotta leave, gotta get out of here to go chase a title somewhere else because it's not going to happen the way it's set up right here.
I just hope he would find that in him to do that because I want to. Like, I don't care about anybody else in this scenario other than Connor McDavid and me and myself. I want to see this guy play in meaningful games,
right,
in his prime.
Yeah.
I don't want to see him waste away in a meaningless in a franchise that has no idea what it's doing to improve itself for year upon year upon year and just with this nonsense faint hope that's never going to come to fruition.
No, I don't want to see him end the streak of generational players winning Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
And you could argue Lindros was a part of that. He didn't get it, but his career was derailed. And as great as Lindros was, and at one point he was the most dominant player in the league, on the hard.
Incredible.
But it feels like McDavid is a step above. And we're talking about McDavid trending towards being in that list of top five or seven players all time, which Lindros obviously is not a part of. Gretzky was too good. He was going to win.
Yeah.
Bobby Orr, too good. He was going to win. Gordie Howe won. Mario won. Crosby's won. You know, I always thought it was just a lock. If you're this much better than anybody else, it's idiot proof. That guy's going to win a title at some point.
He is that much better. We were going over yesterday his even strength points. Like, he's nearly 20 ahead of the next guy last year. Like, Claude Giroux was like 18 points behind McDavid, who had 84 even strength points. And his team still had a negative 29 goal differential. Like, they got the best player by far in the world as their first line centerman, and they've got a negative 29 goal differential. That's how bad they are.
That's how bad they are. But it's good to hear that the boys are coming back.
You wouldn't want to break that team up.
No, why would you? It's Peter Chiarelli. He's committed. Tiger teeing off tomorrow, round one of the PGA Championships. We'll tee that up quickly next. Time out for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Over the number in the Jays game again tonight. Yankees Road Plus in the south side of Chicago and the Cubs Road Plus in Kansas City. Throw down 20, you can score 58. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Round one of the PGA Championship tomorrow. High hopes for Tiger or what?
Yeah, well, how can you not have high hopes for Tiger? I mean, he electrified the sporting world just a couple weeks ago at the British Open, and that was one of the great moments of the year, wasn't it? Like the Tiger Woods in command of the outright lead at the Open Championship at Carnoustie. That sent a jolt through the Twitterverse and the sporting universe like very few things have in recent memory.
Maybe more memorable than any other major win of the past couple of years. Like the fact that he was just in the lead
at one
point.
Who's been getting excited about Brooks Koepka winning the U.S. Open?
And no.
Just, you know, like I mean, Jordan Spieth had some exciting wins. I mean, let's be honest here. Jordan Spieth at at the Open the year before, where, you know, he had that incredible back nine surge on Sunday was great. But nothing moves the needle like Tiger. And
no,
nothing ever will move the needle like Tiger in this sport or any other. I mean, he's like, he is in that conversation of the greatest needle mover, not just in golf, but in the history of sports.
Oh, comparatively speaking, yeah. I can't think of anybody that would come close.
Yeah.
It's really outside of maybe a really popular boxer, like maybe Tyson at its height.
You're right. Like Muhammad Ali at his height. Like you're going back into the Babe Ruth era where Babe Ruth commanded the sporting universe in a way that very few guys have. And Major League Baseball was worried that Babe Ruth was going to start a breakaway league because he was that charismatic. Like he's that kind of guy. Like he's bigger than the sport in a way. And you know, Tiger is bigger than his sport in that way too.
Yeah.
But I mean, you look at it like he's showing signs. Like he's also showing signs of fatigue.
He didn't have a great weekend last weekend. And like that's because coming off the British, he went on vacation.
Yeah.
And that's always been a part of the debate over the past handful of years. How committed is Tiger to really getting back to form?
Well, yes.
You got to practice, man.
There's the other side of that. Now that he's got this spinal fusion, I've talked to orthopedic guys who say, you know, spinal fusions are great, but then they, you know, and it'll hold, but the around the spinal fusion, the links between the parts where your spine isn't fused, suddenly those become weak links. And if you just keep hammering balls 500 a day, you're going to have a problem.
The complicated scenario that is Tiger Woods.
Well, the complicated scenario being an elite athlete at age 42, too.
Yeah, true enough.
It ain't easy.
Well, and I'm not bracing myself for Phil Mickelson winning this weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never know. It could happen.
Well,
but Phil's 46 or whatever.
Yeah, he has flashes still.
Yeah.
But anyway. Hey, man, it's like if Tiger's in contention, that's all we can really ask for, right? If Tiger's just hanging around, it makes it so much more fun, doesn't it?
That's what I'm banking on starting tomorrow. All right, Dave, thanks for this all week, man.
Great seeing you.
Appreciate it. We'll do it again, I'm sure, later in the month. There's Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. Steve Simmons will be in here tomorrow. I'm out of here. I will be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.